We are ready for our next speaker, Aaron Gatch, a co-founder of the Center for Tactical Magic, which creates projects that trespass across the borders of art, activism, and daily provocation. And I heard rumor of something called a tactical ice cream unit that I'm hoping we hear a little more about as well. Please welcome Aaron Gatch.
All right, thank you very much for showing up and hear what this is all about. It's true, we have the tactical ice cream unit here today. So there'll be free ice cream and loads of propaganda and mischief following the talk. You can come check it out. I think we're probably gonna double park right out front until we get shooed away, and then we'll just roll along merrily like ice cream trucks do. First off, the Center for Tactical Magic started up about 2000, and the way that it began, I don't know if you can read this, but I'll kind of just give a synopsis real quick. The way that it began was as an investigation into understanding power and how we understand power, how we understand it on an individual level, on a community level, on a national level or a transnational level, and how that begins to manifest in everyday life. So we wanted to conduct interviews with different people that we thought had special skill sets around power, and the people that we contacted initially was a magician, a private investigator, and a ninja. And after we had begun working with these people, it became really evident very quickly that the interview format wasn't going to work. But I began training with the ninja, I began shadowing the private investigator, and began apprenticing with the magician, and then later on developed a collaborative structure where we could do these different types of collaborations with different professionals in different fields and figure out how we could break that into projects. So later on we did collaborations with people that were active in issues around deforestation. We did stuff with some of the former members of the Black Panther Party. We worked with hypnotists, locksmiths, I'm trying to think who else, anybody? American Red Cross kind of came into the fold at one point. I know they're problematic in some ways, but it made for an interesting collaboration nonetheless. So let me just show you guys real quickly a few of the projects that we've worked on. So this is just off of our website. If you could scroll down on the... We've got a number of different projects that are all collaborative in different ways, but not always with the same collaboration. So it's not the rock star collective kind of mode of working with people. It's not the same members always coming together and doing projects. Different people jump on and jump off depending on what the project is. And part of the reason that we work that way is it really opens up into a lot of different areas and a lot of different fields. So for example, if you think about magic on a whole, there's a lot of different ideas that will jump to mind immediately. Let's just do this really, really quickly. When everybody just close their eyes for a second and think about the word magic. Yeah, meditate on magic. Okay, now when you can open them, and when I ask you, the first thing that popped to your mind when you thought of magic, what was it?
You.
Me.
For you. That's a magic.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. We have unicorns. I appreciate that. What's that?
A cloak.
A cloak, okay. Anybody else? Anybody? You're going to make me do the ESP, right? Anybody thinking of like a rabbit in a top hat? Anybody? You can admit it. I feel it. Anybody thinking of Houdini? I'm sensing Houdini, self-liberation, Wicca, occult, metaphysics. Right? Somewhere in between there, conjuring on the one hand, illusions, occult, metaphysics, spirituality on the other. We've got this whole range of things that fall into the fold of magic. Kind of in a similar way that Foucault talks about sexuality being a construction, we can think about something like magic as being a construction that cuts across all these different barriers. When the Center for Tactical Magic is investigating magic, we're not prioritizing one type of magic over another. We're not saying it's all tricks and illusions, and we're not saying we're all about occult and metaphysics, but we are incorporating both of those things. So if we look at a project like can you click on the Ultimate Jacket? So, like, one of the first projects that we started doing was this project called the Ultimate Jacket. And the Ultimate Jacket came about because after the initial meetings with the magician, the private investigator, and the ninja, was the realization that all three of these guys were using secret pockets. And magicians were using secret pockets for tricks and illusions. Ninjas were using secret pockets for distraction devices. Private investigators were using secret pockets for recording devices. And there was that kind of epiphanal moment that you have occasionally when you start off on some weird project where everything starts to line up. And for us, secret pockets was kind of the key. It was this moment where it was as if power equals secret pocket. So we designed a jacket that has 50 secret pockets. All throughout the jacket, it's waterproof, breathable, abrasion resistant, fully reversible, the sleeves zip off. And you could use it for everyday interdiction. You can use it for agency, for autonomy. You can use it, depending on whatever situation you ended up in, you would be ready to go with whatever you had at any given point in time. So this is sort of operating on the one hand as a metaphor for looking at how we understand power. If you think about a pocket, the way that a pocket is valuable is that a pocket simply describes a space. A pocket is valuable in that it's an empty space that you can then fill with potential. So the jacket purports to have 50 pockets throughout it, allowing you to do what you need to do when you need to do it. If you can go back and then go down to the Smoky Hill River Outpost, this is kind of the architectural version of the ultimate jacket. So if you think about the ultimate jacket turned into a building, this is kind of what you get. And this is a mishmash of everything from like construction site to playground to panopticon, kind of roughly pyramid structure. The area that's defined by it, kind of the footprint, there's a chain link fence that runs the course of it that's shaped like a pentagon. And this thing was built in a small town in Kansas, in Salina, Kansas, which is mostly an agricultural community. And it was in the middle of their park during a festival called the Smoky Hill River Festival. And we found this one kind of area that was right on the outskirts of the festival, outskirts of the park, but kind of near the entrance. And that was where we began to establish the outpost. And what the outpost is on the from the outset, it's a combination of power structures within different types of architecture. On the inside, you've got all these different rooms that that play with different types of surveillance, both high-tech surveillance like police scanners and cell phone scanners and spy cameras and bugging devices, but then also mystical types of surveillance like crystal balls or Ouija boards, looking at ways at how information is gathered and how that can be deconstructed within that space. At the entrance to the park, there was the Boy Scouts in the 50s had donated this scale model of the Statue of Liberty. And you might be able to click on that image. Does that see if that gets if that blows up? So it was a scale model. It was about as tall as the tallest point in this building. And what we did is we mounted a surveillance camera on her chest, and it was beaming back to the outpost. So the first room that you come into, can you go back and see if we've got a shot of that? So the first room that you come into is kind of this militia kind of cabin kind of room. We've got this camouflage couch and this Ouija board. And opposite that is this TV that is out of a prison. It's one of those clear case TVs so that that prisoners can't hide contraband. And that is what's carrying the image from the Statue of Liberty. So if you come in and you sit down at the couch, you're looking at that image, you're seeing what's going on in the park. At the same time, over above the TV set, we've got a two-way mirror that other people can come in and hang out and observe what's going on in this room. In the upper right-hand corner, you can't quite see it here, but we've got one of those surveillance domes that you see in like kind of big corporate shopping stores. And this one, like a lot of those ones, is a dummy surveillance dome. There's actually no camera in it. And the same way that they use them in department stores is to draw people's attention to look at those, and then they know who's doing suspicious activity. So in this case, when people are noticing that, where the camera actually is it's located in the nose and the snout of the wild pig. So you're kind of being viewed through the ever-watchful sniffer of the pig there. who's then beaming it up to the top of the outpost. And as you make your way through the different chambers of the outpost, you begin to deconstruct this and see how things are going on. Now, this project was built with a group of high school students in Salina, Kansas. And I don't know if we have shots of that, but maybe, yeah, let's go with that one. So one of the things that we were looking at doing in setting this up was not just building some kind of like crazy funhouse sculpture, but actually looking at how you can activate that space around pertinent ideas, like how issues of security are affecting people in these different communities. A lot of kids would show up to this and check stuff out too, but so would a lot of adults. This is just a shot of a group Ouija board session with a bunch of 6 to 10-year-old kids. Can we go back one more? And let's go the one with the kid by the door. And I think thinking about how kids interact with social space and how they get introduced to these ideas was really important in this. One of the ways that you would get into the outpost was this long perimeter fence that you'd have to go all the way down and all the way back, and then a security guard would let people in two at a time. Or people could try to get in through that door that you see there, which had a laboratory hand scanner on it. And no one had their prints registered with the hand scanner, so people would stand there for like 10 or 15 minutes trying to get in that door, and it would always tell them that they were denied. And then while they were kind of waiting to get in, some kid would shoot out the wall there, which was actually the door. The door that looks like a door is structural. It's part of the building itself. It's just made to look like it functions like a door. It's got hinges and a doorknob and these sorts of things, but it's not openable, even if you did get access. The actual door is in the wall, and when that opens, it's spring-loaded, so it flips back, and then it relocks again. Adults have a really hard time with this. Adults will watch the door open, they'll see it close, they'll try to open it, it won't open, they'll put their hand back on the hand scanner. Kids get this really quickly. This is like sneaking into a movie theater, and kids understand this kind of style. You wait for the door to open, you hang out, you chill. As soon as the door is open, you grab the door, you hold it open for your friends, everybody sneaks in. Now, one of the interesting things that happens here is adults freak out when they see this, and they start policing this area, even though they have no real authority over the Smoky Hill River outpost. But nonetheless, they'll start grabbing kids and being like, oh no, you don't, you have to wait in line like everybody else. And then you intervene at that point and say like, I'm sorry, what authority do you have here? So it's set up to deal with these different things in a lot of funky ways. If we go back, I just wanna say, I think we're almost done here already. So let's just go to the tactical ice cream unit. The tactical ice cream unit, you can think of the tactical ice cream unit as the vehicular version of the ultimate jacket. It's kind of the unlikely bastard love child of a ice cream truck with a SWAT van and a kind of like the alter ego of the police vehicle mode. It's more like a kind of activist command center. On a day-to-day basis, what it does is it distributes ice cream and propaganda. And what I mean by that is, we collect information, pamphlets that are already being produced by different community groups, and we just redistribute them for them. We help them distribute their information to a wide audience, along with free ice cream. So people come up, the menu is divided in two. You've got treats for the streets on one side, food for thought on the other side. You pick a flavor from each. So it might look like something like, you might say like, I'll have a bomb pop and food not bombs. And every once in a while, you get somebody who's cranky and they don't quite understand the menu format, which is pretty accessible for most people. And they'll come up and rather than finding the thing that they like on the menu, they'll find the one thing they don't like on the menu. And they'll be like, anarchy, what's, I don't like anarchy. And then you're like, that's cool, not everybody likes strawberry either, just pick a flavor that you like. And then they're like, okay, I'll have an ice cream sandwich and know your rights. And that's pretty flawless at that point. A couple of last words before we cut loose and maybe grab some questions if we have a little bit of time. Part of the way the Tactical Ice Cream Union is set up is we were thinking about strategies for creative engagement, successful strategies, activist strategies, and trying to figure out how to combine them. So part of the ice cream truck is set up as like somewhere between, if you slam together like indie media, Food Not Bombs, Cop Watch, and the InfoShop model into a vehicular version, you kind of end up with a tactical ice cream unit. Inside, we're running Wi-Fi. We've got up to 16 different channels of video for being able to go out and do support for community events, for doing cop watching, for doing like sting operations against industrial polluters, these sorts of things. We've also got a complete supply area for any kind of supplies. If you were like, if we stumbled upon, let's say, a civil uprising, and someone was there and they not only wanted ice cream, but they realized they had forgotten some sort of protest essentials, they could come over and they could get batteries or first aid or water or gas masks or leather gloves for lobbing tear gas canisters back at police. We've got all of that stuff on board, ready to be supplied. Everything is distributed on a donation basis or free as needed, so it's kind of set up in that mode. And in case we can't maneuver the ice cream truck where it needs to be, we also have a scout ship, which is the tactical ice cream cart. And if you could roll up a little bit. Yeah, those two shots there. And the cart deploys kind of like it would from a UFO out the side ramp. And we can maneuver that into like along a march, protest march, for example, which we've done. And in the base of the cart, we've got a military surplus mobile sound system that's actually called the Man Pack. And that allows us to use it as a PA system or bump some tunes out of it. So I'll leave it at that. And if maybe there's a little chance that there's a time for little questions, I don't see anything stirring in the back. So, yeah. All the funding comes from grants. Like the grant for this project, we wrote a proposal. We shopped that proposal around to a bunch of places. This project got funded by an art space in Kansas City. And if you track that money all the way through, their money actually comes from Hallmark that makes greeting cards. So this is a very different message than Hallmark would actually like to have out there necessarily, but we're happy to use their money to get the job done. That's right. We care enough to give you the very best. That's excellent. I got to use that. I'm going to take that. And then we've been doing a tour with this thing. We did a tour from Tijuana to Vancouver. Different points on the tour support the project. So if we do a stop at a university, you better believe we charge a university to do that. But if we do a stop at a local bookstore, we don't charge for that. So getting funding from one institution or one kind of social structure allows us to leverage that funding and use it for other places that don't have the funding. And I've just been told we're out of time, but we're going to bring the ice cream truck around front. There's lots of ice cream. There's vegan ice cream. So thank you very much.